Jared Davidson is an author. He's based in Lower Hutt and described as an archivist by day and an author by night. His works appeared in many different fora across the years. And today we're talking about his latest piece. It's called Blood and Dirt, and it explains the little-known history of forced prison labour and how it played a central role in the creation of our country. Jared Davidson is with us today. Thank you for your time, Jared. My name's Dale, and it's a pleasure to have you on our program today. Aho, tēnā koe.
Tēnā koe. Kia ora koutou.
Tēnā koe, Jared. Firstly, I have respect for writers, the amount of work they put into it, the ideas that they formulate, the way they craft the work going forward. So maybe just by way of introduction, mate, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what makes you tick while you delve into areas that are little known to most of us? This focus on forced prison labour is not a kaupapa that surfaces all that often. What's the driver for you? What sorts of issues have you prioritised in your writing career thus far, and then we'll work forward to Blood and Dirt. What are some of the other pieces that you've put together over the years, Jared?
Sure, thank you. Yeah, I'm really interested in things that study work and power and class and thinking about colonisation and kind of unknown histories that have happened here in Aotearoa that tend to get overlooked. So I call my work History From Below, so it's looking at kind of everyday lives and how people have affected change or been impacted on by things like power in the state. So I've studied things like censorship during the First World War, I've studied things such as some working class riots in Nelson in the 1840s, but I've also been really privileged to work on Te Tiriti o Waitangi and He Whakaputanga as part of my job at in the library sector, so working on the exhibition He Tohu. So some of those interests have kind of all come together into this latest book, which does cover really kind of overlooked history, yet the use of prisoners for colonisation is kind of everywhere, and I say it's hidden in plain sight because we walk past the spaces and the streets and forests every single day without probably thinking about it.
The Pacific, for those who colonised this country, was seen as just a potential prison farm, really. If you've wronged society, we'll send you off to Australia, for instance. And then when we look around the numerous prison islands that were created during that period of imperialism, we know too that Aotearoa didn't escape the attention here. And sadly, we've seen a lot of Māori imprisoned over the years, and I guess in many ways too, forced to construct things that we now take for granted. And it's very easy in modern day context to look at a construction, a building, and say, gee, that's amazing. Look at the amount of work in there. I went and watched my grandson play at Auckland Boys Grammar he's at, and went and watched, and I couldn't help but look at all the stonework there and thinking of the guys who were in Mount Eden, who were forced to build what stands there today. And whilst impressive, the reality is that they were, in fact, treated more as slaves. So this is a Māori story, Blood and Dirt. And, of course, we know the situation as well with those taken from Taranaki to Otiputi in Dunedin. And there's a very sad tale there, but one of many, no doubt. How did prison labour help to shape modern New Zealand?
Sure. So pretty early on, because of Convict Australia being nearby, the Colonial Office decided that they didn't want to import convicts to Aotearoa. So what they did instead here, Hobson and officials from the 1840s onwards, made use of the many prisoners who were languishing in jail at the time. And the jails were pretty shoddy, and prisoners, it was seemed like, not doing anything with that untapped labour was more wasteful than crime itself. So instead of keeping them in the jails, prisoners were kind of marched out into the streets, sometimes in chains, and done a lot of the road works around our major ports and major harbour fortifications in terms of military forts. So prisoners built those. Prisoners also built breakwaters such as the Aramoana Mole in Dunedin, And like you've said, you've already mentioned the Taranaki prisoners sent to various places in Aotearoa during the New Zealand Wars and after, but the Taranaki prisoners weren't the only Māori, unfortunately, who were put to work. A number of East Coast Māori, number of Māori associated with Te Kōti, were put to work in various places, including Wellington, building streets, building fortifications. Māori prisoners built the road around Miranā Peninsula, so around from Shelley Bay, right around Scorching Bay. And I found that Māori were actually also sent to one of the first prison forest plantations in Marlborough, just near Seddon, at a place called Dumgree. It seems like Māori were sent there, this is around 1904, to plant trees. And so that was another big focus for the prisoners, was planting the trees right across Kaiangaroa on the central plateau. Before prisoners were sent there to plant forestry, it was basically tussock. So the trees, the pine, the billion-dollar pine industry that we associate with Kaiangaroa today has roots in unfree forced labour.
How did you access the information to unravel this? Because most of us will have driven by or walked by a lot of the mahi that you allude to, not realising that it was in fact forced prison labour responsible for the construction. What were some of the challenges for you unearthing the realities for those forced to work in this way?
Sure. I'm very lucky, Dale, in that I'm an archivist during the day, so I have a knack for knowing where to look for research. But it does take time. It took about 4 or 5 years to research this book, using government archives, digging into the various published books. Some of this mahi, the work that prisoners did, is mentioned, and especially in older local histories from the 1930s and 40s, but no one seems to have kind of brought it together into one place. So that was my job. So, yeah, I spent a lot of time in the archives just digging and looking for anything I could find. Photographs of prisoners at work is very rare. You weren't allowed to loiter near a prison gang. It was illegal. So there's not many photographs of prisoners at work during the 19th century. So I kind of scoured archives and online databases for those. And then luckily, researchers today, we can be thankful for some of the family history digital databases, and I could pull out some of the stories of prisoners, such as John McLean, who was a Taranaki farmer who ended up at Devonport's North Head building the fortifications there, or this Italian seaman called Emmanuel Silva, who pocketed a gold watch on a whim and ended up down at Milford Sound Prison, where prisoners built the Milford Track, part of it. So yeah, using the archival kind of sources to dig deeper, and I want to acknowledge Heritage New Zealand and the folk that have done that mahi around acknowledging the importance of wahi tapu in place, because prisons do pop up in that database too. But yeah, it was a bit of a slog, and hopefully people will enjoy the book now and engage with some of those archives and some of those stories in the storytelling that I weave through the book.
It's a very sensitive topic for many because, sadly, some died doing this mahi, buried in mass graves rather than individually identified, and finally never able to acknowledge their loved ones, many wrongfully imprisoned, and never given the opportunity to be celebrated for their starts. I mean, for instance, the guys from Parihaka who were taken away, and here was an example that's now globally noted of peaceful resistance, but yet hauled off and some never returned. So there are some very strong and sad elements involved with the information you were able to garner. How did you feel at times when the reality of not just the forced labour, but loss of life as a result of that forced labour and the inability for those who loved these men or women to send them off with the mana and respect they were due?
Yeah, that's for sure true. It is a heavy topic, and I talk about Pākehā especially having this heavy inheritance and benefiting from some of these spaces and the work and the deaths of those prisoners. So for me, Dale, it's about having a conversation about colonisation, about having a conversation about the role of prisons, both in the past and today. And prisons, unfortunately, have had a bigger role than I think we realise. Even the interior of Parliament House in Wellington is held up by prison-made bricks from Pukeahu. So lots of people are having these conversations at the moment around harm and accountability, and hopefully my work will lend some kind of historic knowledge to that conversation as well. But yeah, it has been a heavy topic, and I don't want to pretend that I'm a dispassionate or objective historian. The kind of work I make is based on my politics and thinking about issues of today. So if this book can contribute to that conversation and people can start to look at the land differently and have some of those conversations and honour some of those people, then that would be a good start.
Tēnā koe, can we now sort of view prisons and prison labour as central to the colonisation process?
I think so. I think so, definitely. In my book, I wonder kind of provocatively whether Aotearoa could be considered a prison land, because from Marsden's arrival in 1814 right through to the big prison farms of the 1920s and 30s on to today, so much of our landscapes in Aotearoa and the Pacific has been shaped by unfree forced labour. So, yeah, I think while we're not on the same par as, say, Australia or, you know, the prison complex of the United States, I think New Zealand isn't exceptional in any way or shape.
Tēnā koe, you've mentioned some of the areas that you've looked into. Some prominent buildings, for instance, were done with forced labour, weren't they?
Yeah. Especially, I mean, Auckland, Dunedin did use, as you said, stone from Mount Eden and Bell Hill when it was levelled in Dunedin. But definitely in Wellington, the prison being situated on Pukeahu Mount Cook levelled that hill by about 26 metres over the course of the 19th century, and that clay went into bricks, and those bricks went into buildings across Wellington. So, as I said, Parliament, some of the buildings, Mount Cook Police Station, and various halls around Mount Cook, the Public Trust Building, which is home of the Ministry for Culture and Heritage, has prison-made bricks in it. The tunnels of the Wellington cable car, they're all prison-made bricks. And you'll see them in various other fortifications and around Government House, where the old asylum used to be. Wellington Hospital was made from prison-made bricks, the original one. So those bricks are still popping up today on Miramar, you know, Peninsula and various other places too. But so a lot of that prison labour was infused into the clay and then infused into various buildings across Wellington.
We are looking at a different way of modifying behaviours, and Māori are asking for more input into this sort of rehabilitative environments that might be better suited going forward than this lock them up in a dark, dank cell that has been part of our history of incarceration. What would you say when you've looked at this situation as a tool of colonisation, prisons and forced labour, etc.? It's almost, well, it's akin to slaving, isn't it? What would you say, therefore, Jared, of moves to find a different way, a more culturally appropriate way, because the prison system seems not built by us but occupied by our people?
That's such an important point, and that's right. I mean, prisons did not exist in Te Ao Māori before Pākehā arrived, but unfortunately they have become a massive site of Māori incarceration in the past and in the present. And I think there's some really good organisations such as Just Speak and People Against Prisons Aotearoa, Te Wānanga or Rokawa. People are thinking about ways, thinking about tikanga, thinking about ways of balancing harm and responsibility that don't involve prisons. And I'm not an expert on that, being a historian, but I do think we potentially have an opportunity to think about this differently and address those, as you say, horrendous rates of incarceration of Indigenous peoples in Aotearoa.
I'm glad, mate, that you mentioned Just Speak. We harbour some hope that our young people, I think, as our change agents, of which I'd include you, Jared, that eventually we'll find a better way forward, but we won't know how to unless we understand the fabric of what we're dealing with here, what contributed to where we are in 2023. So books of this type are absolutely vital as we try and identify a better way moving forward. With that in mind, you know, this effort of yours shouldn't be understated. In fact, it adds to the rich catalogue of history that should be tools for change. What would you say of young people's interest in younger people's interest in the historical reality and how it might contribute to a better future with our prison system, but also with the way our communities and society develop going forward?
Sure. Well, I think good history can tell us as much about the present as the past. And so my hope is with, you know, the new Aotearoa Histories curriculum, with a kind of change in mood in terms of Pākehā addressing our history here, and hopefully books such as my, you know, the books that I've been writing will contribute to that discussion of, you know, to use the quote from He Tohu, which I worked on, is talking about the past to create a better future. And I think histories can have an important part in that. And knowing that we don't have to look overseas to other people's histories, there are rich histories here. Some of them are unpleasant, but rich histories here right back to 1,000 years ago that we can draw upon to think about a better future.
Tēnā koe, congratulations and thanks for your efforts
thank
here.
You.
And it's, you know, it doesn't come easy, does it, mate? You've already said there are 5 years of thinking in this one and a heck of a lot of poring over old archival material. Good on you, Jared. What else has taken your eye? What sorts of kaupapa have you got planned to work on in the future, or are you just sort of getting over putting this one together?
I'm having a little break at the moment, Dale, but I do have a few ideas. I think scratching the surface with this, I think there's a lot more story to be told around prison labour. So, yeah, watch this space. Hopefully I'll be able to deepen some things. But, yeah, I have a little rest at this point in time.
Tēnā koe. It's really nice having you on the program, Jared. Thanks very much. And for all the effort you've put into this pukapuka, we appreciate you talking with us.
Thank you, Dale. Tēnā koe.
Tēnā koe. Kia ora to you too, brother. Blood and Dirt.